Violet Brown driving.
Now, it's time to talk Celtics.
Celtics come roaring out of the gate.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show with Gasper and Murray. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The game on lock for sure.
All right, welcome in, 98.5 The Sports Hub. It is the Sports Hub Celtics show. We have obviously been talking Celtics the whole time here. Gasper and Murray, Tim McCone in for Murray. And the Celtics, surprising, at least me, with their performance yesterday, because I thought this series was over after game two, and especially about 7 minutes into game game three last night when what was it? I want to say like 15 or 13 points.
It was 19 to 4, Tim.
Yeah, it was not great.
I was like, they're going to get smoked.
It was not a great start for the Celtics, but Jason Tatum certainly coming alive. And we've been talking a lot about, really, this season, about Danny Ainge and kind of what's gone on here. How did this thing go sideways? One of the things I have to continue to give him credit for is trading the number one pick, trading from one to three, giving up Markelle Fultz, who was the number one pick in that draft, the consensus number one pick, and going with Tatum. That's a hell of a move. Not a lot of GMs in the NBA would have done that, and you have to give him credit at least for evaluating that talent, because Jason Tatum is a legitimate building block for the Boston Celtics moving forward.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a home run move for Danny, and really some bad luck following that, because the way it worked out, the Sacramento pick should have been a really high pick, and that was like the 1 year they were good.
Here's the frustrating part about that, too, to your point.
Go ahead.
I think it was a top 10 pick every year since 2006 leading up to that draft.
Wow.
And then since then, they've been horrific, too. So it's like really can't catch a break.
I know.
When it comes to that Sacramento pick. Brutal.
And people forget, too, that if that if the Lakers pick, I think, what was it, if it fell 2 through 5, they got it?
Yes. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It was after it didn't land 2 through 5. That it rolled over to be the Sacramento pick through Philly, and then that didn't work out. And then the Memphis pick, I know I called it at the time. I'm sorry, like, I'll take a victory lap on this, because I was getting blahed to death on Twitter by Celtics fans when I was like, oh, man, that lottery was a disaster when New Orleans won, the Lakers got the third pick, and Memphis moved up to 2. I was like, this is a disaster. Now the Lakers have the ammunition they need to complete the Anthony Davis deal. That's bad for you. And Ja Morant could be pretty good, and he goes to Memphis, and that's going to turn that pick into, as I said at the time, the Sacramento pick 2.0, and that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, it really is. And I'll say this, too, in terms of those picks and kind of what you got out of that deal. As good as Jason Tatum was, Romeo Langford not giving you much last night.
I mean, he did really hit the 2 threes. He actually came in. I mean, I thought he played good defense. He had 2 threes early, but you're right. He finished 2 of 7, minus 3. So, yeah, I mean, you're right. You're right about, you know, Romeo. He didn't necessarily give you, you know, everything that you'd want. And I think the jury is still very much out, McCone, on that pick. And for it to be like the heist that people wanted to compare it to at the time with Tatum, to, you know, compare it to getting Robert Parrish and Kevin McHale, it's like, okay, you got the Kevin McHale and Tatum, but show me where you got the Robert Parrish.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. So what were your overall takeaways from last night's game? What did you kind of come away with?
Overall takeaways were Tatum's unbelievable, and I don't want to trade him, and he has so much potential as a player. That was one. The other takeaway I had was that what I thought would happen with Kyrie did happen, that Kyrie turned into a passenger, and that they can still get to him in this series, and that if Kemba Walker can just turn it around a little bit, I mean, it's not, I'm not asking for Kemba to go out and score 25 a game. That's not what I'm talking about, and that's not what I'm asking for here, but he has to be better than 13.7 points per game and shooting 17% from three in the series and 31.7 overall. If he's just baseline basic Kemba, then I think that they can steal another game in this series and maybe put a little bit of heat on Brooklyn. Do I think they're going to win it? No, because I think at some point the Nets are going to put their foot down, but if Kemba can just get going a little bit, they can make this thing interesting and at least make the Nets sweat. And who knows, maybe the Nets, maybe they fall apart. Like maybe KD and Harden are sort of looking at Kyrie like, what's up, man? Like, where have you gone?
No, it's true. And look, Harden was fantastic again last night, but you talk about players that have fallen apart in the playoffs. Harden certainly has that reputation, right? So if things start to get a little dicey here in this series, maybe you get that, and maybe Kyrie doesn't have it going, and who knows? All that being said, I think it's Nets in five. I still can't believe that the Celtics actually won that game. And as good as Tatum was, as good as Marcus Smart was last night for you, as bad as Kyrie was, I still, with like a minute 50 left, I was like, I don't feel great about this right now with the Celtics. But no, they got it done last night. And again, credit to them because they showed a lot of fight
they
where
did.
I didn't necessarily think that was going to be the case following those first two performances in Brooklyn. You know, that first half, you're like, in game one, I should say, it was kind of best case scenario for Boston, and they wound up, only up six. And that's a situation, too, where you look at the big three for Brooklyn. They'd only played eight games together, so you're like, maybe you can sneak in that game one win when they're just not comfortable. And then that second half, and then obviously game two when they just absolutely buried you. I thought this series was over. So, you know, at least nice to see the Celtics actually have some fight last night.
Yeah, let me ask you a question.
Yep.
As a Celtics fan, would you rather that they just get smoked in five, because that really will force them to look in the mirror and look at things from a stark standpoint and say, man, we got to make some changes here? Or do you want them to make it a series, push the Nets, make Kyrie sweat, but if they lose in six, you know, inevitably, there's going to be that narrative from the Celtics and the Celtics fans, the organization overall. Well, we took them to six and we didn't even have Jalen.
Yeah. No, if we just had Jaylen Brown, obviously maybe we're a lot closer than we were.
Yeah.
Look, they're not going to get to six, so we don't have to worry about it. But I look at this team, and you have to make some major, major moves. And I think looking at Kemba Walker and seeing if you can flip him for something, again, most probably one of the more untradeable contracts in the NBA. But every contract in the NBA is tradable because we saw John Wall get flipped. What are you going to bring back? That's going to be the question.
Yep.
I don't know if there's necessarily a piece like Russell Westbrook where
that's
the
value
is kind of tanked. Like that's the part that's tough.
Yeah, that's what I want to say to you, McCone. You're right, and I love where your head's at. I love it. But the issue there is, okay, yeah, you're right. They were able to move off of John Wall's contract, but they took another horrible contract back. So who's the other horrible contract that you would be willing to take back for Kemba? And I know B-Rob's talked about this a little bit. There's a school of thought in the league that if the Celtics want to get rid of Kemba, they're going to have to attach a first-round pick to it just for someone to absorb the contract.
It's interesting. B-Rob, do you think there are some deals out there that could be made, whether it's a guy like Al Horford maybe? I mean, that's a deal that certainly...
I've heard Porzingis maybe.
Oh, God.
Yeah, those are two. I actually made a list of this so I can throw some names at you guys on top
yes,
of those guys.
I love
I'll be writing on this once we get into the offseason, but... it's a very, very short list. So here's one.
Promising. Good, good.
Right, sorry, this is real good. Yeah, so I think Horford's most realistic. Porzingis. Houston. Eric Gordon. DJ Augustine. Whatever. And like a couple other players there. If you attach a first-round pick there, would you do that knowing that, you know, Gordon has a couple more years on a bigger deal, on a overpaid deal, but not nearly as overpaid as Kemba?
I like Gordon a lot, but doesn't he have some injury issues of his own?
Yes.
He's always hurt. Here's the thing that scares me about Porzingis you brought up. I looked at this when he first came out because I just nerd out in the draft so much. If you're he's freakishly big, right? He's not just tall. He's 7'3". And if you go through the history of bigs in the NBA, if you're that tall, you're not healthy. So not only is he really not as effective right now and probably has the worst attitude in the NBA when you watch the Mavericks play, but like he's just not going to stay healthy for you long term. So, you know, an injured, angry 7'3 Latvian is not necessarily one of the building blocks I want for the Celtics.
I would roll the dice on him.
Yeah?
Yeah, because you don't know what you're dealing with at center with Robert Williams. He can play center. He's averaged 20 points per game the last 2 years. He's not a perfect player. I know there's health concerns, but this is the way I feel. If you're going to give me a guy who's injured, I'd rather have an injured big guy than an injured little guy.
That's a great point.
Because big guys can adapt and survive and with their height, remake their game and be okay. A little guy like Kemba, if he loses 5 to 10% of his quickness, and we've seen this, suddenly you're not the same player.
It's such a good point. And again, you've seen this with the knee injury. He's not the same guy that he was in Charlotte. And I'm not sure at this point, again, when you've gone through essentially two full off seasons of the knee and trying to get better and you've managed it the way you did this season, to see him play like he has in the playoffs, like I think it's kind of over for Kemba Walker. Who else did you have on that list, B-Rob?
Orlando. They are a rebuilding team like OKC. and they actually have some talent there, some big salary. So knowing that you have to probably include a couple first-round picks here of Kemba, but you could get maybe Gary Harris, who makes about $20 million, and Terrence Ross. Would you fork over a bunch of first-round picks to get a couple guys there that are on more manageable deals and might be able to help you in roles better?
No.
No, I hate that deal.
Yeah, I hate that deal. I'm not doing that deal.
Okay.
I would do Porzingis, and I would maybe – I like Eric Gordon. I just would be nervous about whether he could stay healthy. I mean, the deal I want – I know I keep pumping this, and it's probably not going to happen now because Bogdanovich is playing too well, but it's like Marcus Smart to Atlanta for Bogdanovich.
Waited too long.
I know.
That was out there.
I know, because now he's like way too valuable to the Hawks.
Exactly. Yeah. So another couple of random ones. And then this just shows you kind of how tough it is to make a match here. New Orleans, would you take Eric Bledsoe and Steven Adams?
No.
That's pretty much close to it. Kevin Love?
Yeah.
Kevin Love's available.
I'll take Kevin Love. I like the idea of...
I wouldn't hate that. Yeah.
They need stretch bigs, and I like the idea of stretch bigs in Brad's system. I think his system is tailor-made for stretch bigs.
The problem is the Cavs have Garland and Sexton, so they're probably going to be like, give us a first-round pick, too.
Yeah, I agree.
Because we'd have no use for Kemba.
Yeah, what are they going to do with Kemba? They'd have to flip him to another team. Boy, this is stark.
It is going to be rough, which is, again, why everyone's like, oh, yeah, this is the deal you want to make. You have to find a partner there, and I think it's a very short list of realistic deals that could be out there for them.
It's brutal, too, because you go back a couple years, and with Chris Paul being a quote-unquote untradeable contract, and now what he kind of did in Phoenix, I know that he's hurt. Like, would have been nice to maybe get on that train a couple years ago when he was available for pretty much nothing. And certainly you're not going to get that for Boston moving forward. But that's what you're kind of hoping for, is find an untradeable quote-unquote contract that winds up actually being a really good player and one that can help you long-term. Let's see if Boston can do that this offseason. All right, going to step aside. It's Gasper and Murray. Tim McCone in for Murray. We're going to get to some of your phone calls coming up here next on 98.5.
It's an hour dedicated to your Celtics. Chris Gasper, Jim Murray, the Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Excitement is building for another banner.
Round for three, got it.
The Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
My perspective this year, I've kind of seen the things floating around with Boston and the topic of racism, and the people around me urge that I should share my perspective. I have not talked to anyone, not Kyrie, Marcus or Danny Ainge, about my thoughts or my perspective, but I do think it's a good conversation. Yeah, I think that racism should be addressed, and or systemic racism should be addressed in the city of Boston, and it also should be addressed in the United States. However, I do not like the manner it was, you know, brought up in terms of centering around a playoff game. It bothers me if, you know, the construct of racism, right, is, you know, used as a crutch or an opportunity to execute a personal gain. I'm not saying that's the case, but I do think racism right now is bigger than basketball.
All right, back here. Sports Hub Celtics Show, Tim McCone, Chris Gasper. That was Jaylen Brown prior to game three last night, touching on the Kyrie Irving subject. Interesting there that he mentioned that he did not, has not had a conversation with Danny Ainge leading up to that. But what were your initial thoughts when you heard Jaylen Brown's comments last night?
Yeah, I mean, I think very thoughtful with Jaylen, and yeah. I liked a lot of what he had to say. And I think, you know, his overarching message really was the idea that, look, you know, systemic racism is a lot bigger than shouting some racial epithets at NBA players. It has a really pernicious effect on people. The wealth gap, if anybody's ever read Ta-Nehisi Coates, the great story he wrote in The Atlantic about redlining in Chicago and the restrictive real estate opportunities for African-Americans after World War II and how that's contributed to huge, you know, generational differences and wealth and all that stuff. So I think, you know, again, thoughtful of JB to look at it from a bigger picture. And obviously there's no love loss with Kyrie. And I think Jaylen Brown is saying something that I've said and that we had a caller earlier who said that, look, Kyrie Irving is an imperfect messenger for this. The way he brought this up, it's a valid discussion, a valid issue, but the way he brought this up was a little self-serving. And I think that turned some people off. Obviously we had the caller Andrew. He's clearly turned off by the idea that it's Kyrie Irving. And I think Brown's sort of saying this is a really serious conversation and that maybe Kyrie could have brought it up at a different time in a different way. Can I just say something real quick, though, about Kyrie?
Yep.
Because I wanted to say this, and I wanted to say this on Felger and Maz, and I didn't say it. I think one thing people have missed is I don't think it was a coincidence that Kyrie brought this up on the one-year anniversary of the death of George Floyd. So I know everybody's saying he did this just to deflect, and he was trying to defuse the crowd, and he didn't want to face the music. And I think there's probably some legitimacy to that. But Kyrie is also that guy that like changes the subject in his head without telling you he's changed the subject. And I'm sorry. I just know that that one-year anniversary of George Floyd's death and how politically active Kyrie has been, that it was probably something that was on his mind and on his heart and one of the reasons that he brought it up.
That's interesting. So you heard there Jaylen Brown mention, by the way, that he had not had that conversation with Danny Ainge. Danny Ainge did come on Toucher and Rich earlier this week, talk about how he had not heard anything in the 26 years, I think, that he's been a part of the organization. We got some reaction across the rest of the NBA, courtesy of Woj last night during pregame. I wanted to play that for you, too, because I thought this was interesting. Jay Williams also weighing in on the pregame for Game 3. Take a listen.
Championship teams have openly talked about it. This is a real thing, and I think that we collectively coming together to address racism in wherever that exists is a conversation that must continue to maintain and really be at the forefront of all dialogue around sports. It really does.
Yeah, and the comments that Celtics president Danny Ainge made in response to Kyrie Irving's news conference after the game the other night, that Danny Ainge in his 26 years in Boston had never heard this from either a teammate in as a player in Boston or as an executive in his years running the Celtics front office. That shocked people around the NBA that Danny Ainge would say that, because as you just said, Jay, you're talking about from Marcus Smart in the current era back to Bill Russell and the original Celtics prior to Danny Ainge. His teammates did go through that in Boston. Gerald Henderson, Cedric Maxwell talked about it in the great book Selling of the Green. And so the idea that this was new to Danny Ainge surprised people around the league that he would say that, and it's really not based in reality.
And that just really bothers me for a second, because just because you didn't see something happen doesn't mean that it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And those are the comments from a leadership perspective. That sounds a little tone deaf to me.
Interesting there. And yeah. I think that kind of nail it when you talk about Ainge. And again, I'm not sure how locked in Ainge was during that interview. And that's probably something that he regrets, since obviously, like we talked about, he was golfing, but certainly not well received across the league.
Well, especially you talk about Woj, you know, we've been talking a lot about messengers today, Kyrie being the messenger. There's no bigger NBA messenger than Woj. And the message that Woj is telling you is that other people around the NBA, I'm assuming he's talking about players and front office people, are blown away in a negative way by Danny Ainge's comments. They're kind of like, come on. So doesn't that kind of tell you that this is something to the point that Smart and Thompson said, and also to the point of Kyrie and off camera Kevin Durant? So in NBA circles, whether this is true or not, it's sort of like a known thing that Boston's known for this. I mean, wouldn't that tell you that just by the reaction that Woj said he got? Like, people were shocked. He used the word shocked.
Yeah.
They were shocked that Ainge would say that, which means that this is, seems to be one of those things that in NBA circles is just kind of like a given.
No, it's a fair point. I don't know how you hear those comments and take anything else away from it. And again, I think Ainge probably regrets the way that he handled that interview. Probably not the best time to be on the golf course and kind of, I don't want to say mailing it in, but it just didn't seem like that was as focused as you should have been during that a conversation that was obviously a lot more serious than what it ended up being. And if the rest of the NBA is going to take your comments away from, like, I'm not sure there's a lot of context across the rest of the NBA in terms of how that interview went, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there's no question about it. And look, I don't know. Look, Utah has had issues. They had the issues with Russell Westbrook, a fan calling him boy. We have what happened with Ja Morant and Ja Morant's family. So I know Utah certainly does not have a great reputation.
No, you got the Trae Young stuff this week. You got the Russell Westbrook stuff this week. You said, all the stuff going on in Utah. Yeah. So it's not like this is an outlier. No. But again,
let me ask you this real quick, McCone, because people have grouped those things in. I would group the Morant stuff in with what Kyrie's talking about. So Utah, Boston, I see it. But the stuff in New York with Trae Young and the stuff with Russell Westbrook and the popcorn, are those racially motivated incidents, or are those just
kind of lack of respect type of stuff?
Are those just a-hole fans?
Yeah, I think those are probably just a-hole fans. I think the Utah stuff, again, to your point, when you've seen the Russell Westbrook stuff in Utah, is probably a little different.
Because John Morant's dad said that basically a fan said to him, "I'll put a nickel in your back and watch you dance, boy." Like, that's pretty disrespectful. Yeah. And that definitely has racial, I'm not even say undertones, racial overtones.
No, it does. No question. All right. 617-779-0985. Let's sneak in one call here before we go to break. Let's go to Raphael in Brockton. What's up?
Hello.
Hey.
How you guys doing?
Good.
Yeah. I just first want to start off by commending you, Chris Gasper, for speaking up the way that you did on Felder and Maz. I think that it's important. I think one of the things that's very important is that we have more perspectives from people that are different from what we normally tend to have in media. And I think that is very important because, you know, people all want to, you know, get to understandings of certain things, but it's hard to get it when you only have one faction or one entity type of people talking about that. Mm-hmm. So I just want to commend you. I think that it's great. And people in Boston are hearing what you have to say. And people of color like myself hear what you have to say. And I think it's vital because in order for us to move forward, we have to start to address this more and more. Now, let me just move on to Kyrie Irving. I think what he said was important. I know that, you know, sometimes when a messenger comes out and says things and it's, you know, you kind of have to question the messenger, but the message is the message.
Yep.
And I think that we need to talk about these things because whether you're an athlete, whether you're just the average Joe in Boston, Boston has been very racist, but at the same time, it's progressing. But how do we move it along? How do we get it forward? How do we get everybody to talk about it and try to change, not just speak on it or hear about, but actually change? And it starts with within. People have to look at the other person across from them and say, hey, you know what? That person's different from me. But that doesn't mean that person's less than me. We have to move forward in this conversation, or else Boston is going to continue to have this stigma attached to it. And Danny Ainge, he didn't do himself any service by saying what he said. And see, that's part of the problem, too, is that I think it's just that time now to have a change when it comes to Celtics ownership and Celtics management. Now, Wick might not be there, but Danny said something that he just doubled down on what Kyrie's saying. You can't ignore the problem. At least acknowledge it. To be playing for the Celtics or be a part of the organization for 26 years and not hear anything that's racial, especially in the 80s, I mean, come on. That's so disingenuous. And the players hear it. The players understand it. And the players say, hey, you know what? I might like the city of Boston. I might like the Celtics. But if I have my GM, the president of basketball operations, speaking the way that he did, it doesn't make you feel comfortable. It doesn't make you feel like you're part of something special. And that needs to change. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, look, if Danny could do it over, I think what he should have said is, I personally have not heard these things, but I want to talk to my players about this because I wouldn't be a target of it. And just because I've heard it doesn't mean that it hasn't happened. So it's a discussion that we're going to have. I'm going to talk to my players and I'm going to talk to people around the league, and we're going to do everything as an organization to root out this behavior if it's happening. You know, it's a tough one. I'm not making excuses for Danny, but it's a little bit of a tough one in this regard because you don't want to alienate the paying customers either. right? So he doesn't want to come out and basically say, yeah, you know, we have this issue and our fans are the, you know, the most racist fans in the league. He doesn't want to do that, obviously. And I don't even think that's true, that statement. So that's tough, but I think there was a better way to do it. And he should have sort of acknowledged. Now, he did say, in fairness to Danny, he did say, I spoke to Kyrie and that never came up. But he should have said, you know, it never came up with Kyrie, but I'm going to reach out to Kyrie before he comes here. You know, if the league will let me and it's not tampering, and let him know we support him in that regard. And if there's anything that happened here, I want to hear about it because I want to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jay Williams, and I'm not sure if he said in that clip or if it was before, but it just that there was a lack of empathy in that whole statement by Ainge. There's no question about that. All right, 617-779-0985. I'm going to step aside, get to your calls here on the other side of the Celtics. 98. I knew this was going to happen at some point. I can't get this show right for the life of me. Sports Hub Celtics Show. That's the one. Nailed it. There you go.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show. This is Salem Brown, and home with the Boston Celtics basketball. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
It's an hour dedicated to your Celtics. Chris Gasper, Jim Murray, the Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It was big. Everybody contributed tonight. Tristan was a monster down there, you know, smart. You know, Romeo came in, obviously Fournier, and it wasn't necessarily Kemba's night offensively, but, you know, just him being out there, being vocal, still being engaged, you know, that won't necessarily show up in the stat book, but... You know, we wouldn't have won without him. Obviously, he's going to respond. Expect a big game out of him on Sunday. But, you know, everybody played a part.
All right, back here, it is Tim McCone, Chris Gasper with you. Sports Hub Celtics Show.
That's it. Sports Hub Celtics Show.
Nailed it. There we go. 617-779-0985. Look, I don't think this is going to be a series. I know it's 2-1 right now. I expected a non-competitive Brooklyn sweep, so it's a nice thing that they got this win and an unbelievable performance by Jason Tatum last night with those 50, and I think long-term, that's the one takeaway from this series, because, again, I don't think this is going to be much of one. But I think the fact that Jason Tatum could be on a stage with three of the, what do you say, top 15 at least talents in the NBA and be the best player on the court tells you that you have an elite talent here, at least in Boston, to build around for the future.
I completely agree with you, and I think that's really the most encouraging thing that we've seen so far in the series. Also, just the response from Tatum. I mean, he had been struggling those first two games. There's no question about it. He wasn't playing well. He was 3-for-12 before he got poked in the eye the other night in game two. He shot 6-of-20 in game one. For him to come back like that and be able to drop 50, and now four times this year he scored 50 or more points. So it's not a fluke. It's not a lightning strike. This is what this guy is capable of. That's really encouraging when you have a 23-year-old and you know you have a building block there. Now the question is, what can they put around Tatum and Brown? And that sort of goes back to Kemba. I mean, they really need more from Kemba in this series. And it's not just about this series and trying to win this series. They need Kemba to play well so that he enhances his trade value. If Kemba's out there and he looks like damaged goods, then it's kind of going back to Isaiah Thomas. And now Danny's in a position where he has to try and peddle another damaged goods point guard. It worked out last time to a degree with Kyrie, but you had to attach a lottery pick to Isaiah Thomas, and you also had to attach the quote-unquote, air quotes, best contract in the league.
Jay Crowder.
And Jay Crowder to be able to move on, and you don't have the same assets this time. So they really need Kemba to play better, not only to make this series, you know, at least watchable, semi-competitive, but also so that in the offseason he has some trade value.
Yeah, and let's not forget, too, I mean, obviously Isaiah Thomas was never the same player again, but with the point you traded him, the last time you saw him, he was managing that injury, and he couldn't really stay healthy in the playoffs, but he was still an MVP-caliber talent, at least for the Celtics, you know, playing at an elite level. At this point, Kemba Walker here for the last year and a half has not been the same player that he was in the first half of his first year of his contract here, and then obviously in Charlotte either. And you just continue to look at the way that they've tried to manage his knee, and it hasn't gotten better. I'm just not sure. That's going to be a really, really hard sell for Ainge moving forward if you're trying to get off of that contract.
Totally. I mean, because Ainge has peddled damaged goods in the past, and this was supposed to be the payoff for Kemba, right? This was supposed to be the reality of Kemba Walker now, the payoff for managing him and not playing him in back-to-backs, because let's be honest about it. One of the reasons that they were in the play-in, one of the reasons that they are the seventh seed and have to face the Nets, is that Kemba couldn't go and play back-to-backs. They would have won more games. So now this is supposed to be the payoff, and I haven't seen it. He's averaging 12.7 points per game. So if he gets all that time and all that rest, and it's not like he's going up against a team that's exactly a defensive juggernaut. I mean, could James Harden be any more disinterested defensively than he is?
It's such a good point, and that is one I was just going to make, too. It's not like he's going up against, you know, an elite defensive team here, too. So you would think that this would be a matchup where at least he could provide you something on the offensive end, and it just hasn't happened. All right, speaking of Kemba Walker, Eric has some ideas in terms of moves maybe the Celtics could make with Kemba this offseason. What's up, Eric?
How's it going, guys?
Hey, Eric.
Hey, I had two quick trades for you guys and one point. I'll make them quick. What do you guys think about just trading for John Wall? I think the South is really small at point guard with Pritchard, Kemba, and I'm forgetting who the last Tremont Waters, Carson Edwards. So getting a bigger guard to help play defense, can attack the basket. Secondly, an unrealistic trade that I like a lot is trying to package maybe Marcus Smart, Kemba, and some first-round picks to see if you can get Julius Randle. If the Celtics just lack some attitude, he's a stretch four, stretch five that can play in the paint. I think I like the idea of him playing alongside Rob Williams. I just don't see the Knicks actually trading them.
Yeah, me neither.
And then lastly, the whole what's been going on with Boston and Kyrie thing. Look, I'm black. I grew up in Roxbury, minor in the city. Moved out to Haverhill when I was like 17. And when I went out to Haverhill, it was very different culture. I grew up in inner city, so it was just I would see majority Spanish and blacks. When I got to Haverhill, I was just maybe like three or four black guys or black people in the school at the time. And it was different. But I would say I got a lot of family in the South, and I think if you talk to a lot of people in the South, they'll tell you certain areas that are racist. Mm-hmm. Open KKK rallies. I think with Boston, it's a perception thing from the past and the stories from the legends that we had from the Bill Russells and all the documentaries and stuff that came out. And I'm not saying the state doesn't have its racist portion, because that would be a lie. But I just don't see how Boston gets, you know, distinguished from anywhere in the South. Like the Mississippi, the Alabama, I just don't see how players are still just kind of nitpicking at Boston when there's plenty of other experiences going out. I mean, going around the NBA, I'm sure these guys talk. It's just sometimes it just feels like it's already hard enough to get free agents to sign you just because we're not the greatest of destinations. And then when you throw it as a race factor that's coming in with, I think, from like the 70s and 80s, and I'm not saying it isn't going on. I just don't think it's that much different from any other place here in America. That's just my take on it.
All right, yeah, appreciate the take. And there's, you know, obviously that's a perspective, and he has a life experience that adds validity to that perspective. I'll just say that, you know, what I've heard from relatives and people, the difference, and people have said this in the past too, the difference in the South is that they're kind of like upfront with it. You know where you stand. And some of the northern cities, everybody says they're on your side until they're not. And I think that's kind of the difference. It's almost, you know, when you know what the deal is straight up, it's like, okay, this is the deal, and you sort of work with it. But when it sort of comes out of the blue, like the Marcus Smart example, where it's like, hey, you know, you just cheered me on in the arena, like, great. And like, you know, you love me, you love Marcus Smart, but then like I'm out in the street and you don't recognize me and I'm trying to help you and you just snap on me and call me the N-word. That is harder to deal with in a lot of ways than when you just know, like, okay, well, there's like a KKK thing down the street, or you know, there's this white nationalist group, so you know they're against you. It's like anything, right? It's like, would you rather fight against an enemy that you can see, like out in the open, or would you rather be ambushed in guerrilla warfare?
Yeah. in terms of attracting free agents, it seems like the Celtics, I mean, you know, going into the Al Horford signing, you know, the big thing was, oh, who's the biggest free agent in Celtics history? It's Dominique, well, washed up Dominique Wilkins. But then you managed to land Al Horford.
Which was huge.
Gordon Hayward. And then you bring in Kemba Walker on a max deal as well. I think the thing with all three of those guys, and maybe not so much Kemba because that year previous it had really gone sideways with Kyrie, but it seemed like this organization was building towards something. And right now, I'm not necessarily sure there's that positive momentum right now with the Celtics that you would need. I think you could sell the fact that you would come in with, you know, Jason Tatum, who's an elite player, Jaylen Brown moving forward. But it's going to be interesting to see kind of the sell job that Ainge and Stevens would have to do, not necessarily with a free agent, but trying to attract that next disgruntled superstar in the NBA, which, you know, comes up every 3 months, it seems like. I would think Bradley Beal is probably one of the next ones. And, obviously he has the relationship, the St. Louis ties with Tatum. So you should be able to be in the mix with that. But it's going to be interesting to see the sell job that they do with Boston.
Yeah, and here's the other thing. It seems like, so a guy like Tristan Thompson, who corroborated what Kyrie said, he knew about this, but he came here anyway.
Because
he's basically like, oh, that crowd is, you know, ferocious. I don't like all the things that they say, but, you know, I want to be on the side of that crowd. So it didn't stop Tristan Thompson. I'm not saying he's a marquee free agent by any means, but it didn't stop him from coming here, even though he says he's heard some stuff in the past.
Yeah, that's true too. All right, 617-779-0985. Anthony, Josh, Johnny, Chris, see you guys lined up. We'll get to your calls on the other side here. It's 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It's an hour dedicated to your Celtics. Chris Gasper, Jim Murray, The Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Chris Gasper, Jim Murray, The Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
What I told JT is that, you know, great players, you know, they run it back two nights in a row. You know, I've been fortunate to play with some great players, and the greats know that when certain situations are on the line, it's time for them to step up and perform. And you know, JT has that. He's put the work in. It's part of his destiny.
All right, that was Tristan Thompson talking about Jason Tatum's performance. I don't think he was talking about Darius Garland in terms of some of the greats that he's played with in the past there. I'm pretty sure he's talking about LeBron. I'm going to go out on a limb there. Yeah, what a performance last night by Jason Tatum. Again, to be the best player on the court with Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Kyrie Irving, tells you something special in terms of that performance. Quickly, before we get to your calls, I want to tell you guys, 10th annual Who's Your Caddy Classic, June 21st, Brook Meadow Country Club in Canton, Mass. Foursomes on sale this coming Tuesday. That's June 1st at 9 a.m. at 98.5thesportshub.com. Don't forget, space is limited. There's going to be a live auction, silent auction, 50-50 raffle prizes, and more. All proceeds benefit the Pediatric Advanced Care Team at Boston Children's Hospital, generously supported by the Long Drink Coca-Cola Beverages Northeast, Top Shelf Cookies, Stone and Skillet, Anna's Taqueria, Boston Calling, and the Boston Bruins Foundation. You golf at all, Chris?
No, I don't. I tried to take up the sport a couple of times, and I am terrible. What a frustrating sport.
I'm with you. I'm an elite mini golfer. It does not translate to the real thing, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm okay at mini golf. I'm not elite like you, but you're right. It does not translate at all.
617-779-0985. All right, let's sneak in some of your calls here before we go to Hub Headlines. Let's talk to Josh. Josh, what's up?
Hey, McBone and Gasper. It's a good day to be talking sports. It's so friggin' damp and cold out
there. Terrible weather.
Yeah, it's terrible weather. I was just going to say, I agree with Tim. I was going to say, the Nets in five, I think they're just going to put the throttle down. And that's kind of what it really opened for, to answer your question, Gasper.
Okay.
You know, I'd rather have them get absolutely blown out here and realize they need to make changes, because, You know, I could see Brown or Marcus Smart going. Ideally, I don't want Kemba to go. I think he's still got some potential, even with that knee. But
really, even at his age and with that knee and all the time and energy they spent into managing that knee, and this is what he's doing against James Harden and Kyrie, and against a team that's switching like crazy, and he should be getting advantageous matchups, and he's not doing anything.
Give him some rest, Gasper, and he'll give him some more rest, I guess, with the whole offseason.
How much rest does he need? There were game two was Tuesday. Game three was last night. How much more rest are we going to get?
I said that was Josh in Haverhill. That was actually Jim in Stores. Okay. That was Jim Calhoun in Stores calling there.
I just got that. That's great. I like that.
617-779-0985. I'm a diehard UConn fan. I love Kemba Walker. But, yeah, I think the dream is dead in terms of him being at least the max level. And look, we talked about roster building moving forward.
Yeah.
It's really, really hard to build an elite team in the NBA when you're paying max money to a guy who is not giving you max production.
Yes.
Right?
It's true.
I think that's not trying to make it super simple, but at a certain point, it is really simple. If you're paying that much money to a guy that can't produce, especially against the team, like you said, is not exactly elite on the defensive end.
Oh, man, they're brutal.
It's a killer.
Yeah, I mean, you can really see the Mike D'Antoni imprint on this team on defense. Jeez. I mean, they're like allergic to it. I mean, some of the half-hearted, behind rotations from Harden are just, I mean, they're just painful. As great as he is on offense, like you just watch him on defense, and it's just there's just no commitment, no dedication, like minimal effort. It's very difficult to watch. And then Kyrie is small, but he also knows, like, when he gets in a situation where it's not a favorable matchup for him, he just tries to get all up in the guy's face and body him and then fouls him. That's the other thing we haven't talked about with Kyrie. I mean, it was a terrible night for him, not just with the shooting, but how about the 4-point play by Smart?
Yep.
A 3-point play by Tatum, and then the offensive foul he committed in the fourth quarter when the Nets had some momentum there. Smart got him there. So, I mean, he was terrible, to be honest. That's one of the worst games I've ever seen Kyrie Irving play.
What are your expectations for him coming into game four? Do you think it's going to be another bad? Because part of me does wonder if now he's going to drop 50 on the Celtics in this game four. You don't think that's going to happen?
I think he might go out and score like 20 points, and he won't be a total passenger, but I still think he'll be the third banana tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's really possible. Just going back to it, though, the scary thing is that when you've got Tatum dropping 50, Marcus Smart playing really well, and Kyrie struggling the way he did, Nets were still in that game.
They were. Yeah, they cut it to 7 and could have cut it even more a couple of times. Yeah, we figured it out, McCone. I mean, you just said the thing you said about, hey, it's really hard to win in the NBA if you're paying a guy max money and not getting max performance. You know, that's obviously an NBA truism. Well, here's the thing for the Celtics. They figured out the formula for postseason success. Tatum just has to score 50.
There you go.
That's
low bar.
Yeah, low bar. Just go all. Look, Wilt Chamberlain did it for a season. All we're asking him to do is do it for a series. Should be doable.
No issues there. No issues there. All right, Anthony in Medford, let's close things out here on the Sports Hub Celtics show. What's up, Anthony?
Hey, yeah, I totally agree. I think we definitely need Tatum as far as
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.